Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, a program that values the potential of knowledge, collaboration, and growth. The show is hosted by Denise Griffiths, who is known as an intensely curious nerd in stilettos. Each Wednesday, she is joined by co-host Ben Gay III, a renowned figure in the sales world. Ben is recognized for introducing The Closers, one of the most popular and powerful sales training materials ever produced. Having been mentored by Dr. Napoleon Hill himself, Ben has gained a wealth of knowledge in sales and life. Throughout the show, Denise and Ben delve into the world of sales, entrepreneurship, and success, exploring Ben's vast experience from guiding and mentoring countless professionals to achieve unparalleled success in their careers.
Good morning and welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Closers Inner Circle podcast, hosted by your partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and together with my co-host, Ben Gay III, we dive into the world of sales mastery with the gem from The Closers Part 2, and we do this every Wednesday. And these books, Parts 1 and 2, are widely known as the Sales Bibles. They're pretty famous, and they're on a lot of bookshelves, and they get used. So today is a continuation of last week's show, which was called And Another Thing, and that was from the, I had to do it that way, from The Closers Part 2, page 215. Today is part 2 of that discussion, as Ben rightly pointed out last week. It's a fairly lengthy chapter, and we had so much to talk about last week that we're diving right back in, and today we're going to page 222. So please be sure to go back and listen to that show where Ben gives us a glimpse into his incredible sales mastery journey, where years of dedicated study and real-world experience have culminated in a very profound understanding of the sales craft. So as we explore page 222 of The Closers Part 2, let's take a moment to appreciate the wisdom gained from years of dedication and hard work. Ben's insights serve as a reminder that success in sales, it's not just about what you know, but how you apply that knowledge with authenticity and perseverance. Ben, it's Wednesday. Good morning. This is my favorite day of the week.
Well, good morning. It's mine also. I always look forward to our chats. It's like going back home. And speaking of home, I just read somewhere that Louisiana, it was on the news, Louisiana is the most stressful state in the union.
No,
I suspect that would come as a surprise to you.
A bit.
Anywhere, if number one is anywhere in the South, it's incorrect. And if it's in Louisiana, it's doubly incorrect. I don't know how they got there. It was probably some Yankee devil.
Who couldn't understand a Cajun word? Look, it's hard to understand a lot of the accents around here, but these people are so, and I include myself, and I can be hard on myself, but we are pretty laid back.
To say the least.
Yeah. There's a saying around here, you know, it's gumbo, go-go, and dodo. Gumbo is, of course, food. Dodo is sleep, and go-go is you figure it out. It's whatever you want it to be. And that's pretty much a mantra around here. Gumbo, go-go, and dodo. And, of course, there's the French scene, laissez les bon temps rouler. Have a good time. Let's pass a good time. So whoever wrote that is a moron.
That was my reaction. We were lying in bed, getting ready to turn off the lights and go to sleep. And it was the 10 o'clock news or something. And next we have the 10 most stressful states in the union. And I said, oh, that'd be interesting. You know, I was going to guess New York, New Jersey.
Michigan.
Massachusetts.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's because I'm a Southerner. I guess I was biased. And they said, Louisiana is number one, the most stressful state in the union. I just burst out laughing, and Gigi wasn't paying strict attention. She said, what? I said, Louisiana is the most stressful state in the union. She said, not from my experience.
No. I mean, we're easy to get along with. Now, don't mess with us because we do have gun racks on our trucks. But
that's right.
Yeah, that's why we're not stressed. Yeah, that's just nonsense.
I saw a car in the parking lot of some restaurant one day, and I still smile when I think about it. He had the gun rack. There wasn't a gun in sight because we're in California, you know. But the gun rack was there in the back window, and he had a Louisiana tag on his car. And the bumper sticker, it wasn't on the bumper, it was on the fender, sort of where you might try and get into the car. And it said, "There's nothing in this car worth your life."
Ooh,
And I thought, he's got that gun with him. So, he's gonna come
yeah.
up, he's gonna come up behind you with that gun. But
We don't
anyway,
mess around here. That's funny. Thank you for sharing it, but it's baloney. It's just baloney. Just three syllables.
Well, I just wanted to give you my sympathy for living in the most stressful state in the United. And anyone who has ever, you don't have to live in Louisiana to see how humorous that is. Just have to have visited it or gone through the airport,
Oh,
or something.
yeah. Yeah. Or you go into a restaurant, we have the best food. Although, honestly, and I say this with no humility at all, I find that my cooking is oftentimes far better than a lot of restaurants. For instance, I have had gumbo yesterday. I won't eat other people's gumbos. Mine's the best.
Well,
So,
there you go.
yeah, but we do eat strange things. I mean, I will often say if we can catch it and kill it, we'll cook it. Doesn't matter what it is. So if somebody says, "Hey, you want some nutria?" Tell them no. Nutria is a rat. Don't eat
Even
that.
I know that.
Yeah. And people are like, "Oh, I just got a good nutria. Good for you. I'm going to go to McDonald's." And I hate McDonald's.
One of my early mentors and good friends to this day, Merle Fraser, inherited some farmland from his father. He's a city guy, but he's moved into the country. And he said, "Ben," he's got a heavy Southern accent. He says, "Ben," he said, "do you know what a nutria is?" And I said, "Well, I'm aware of them. I'm smart enough not to eat one. But why do you ask?" He said, "Well, we have some nutrias down here burrowing into the bank on the, I don't know if it's a creek or a river, but I got the impression it's a pretty good sized creek, and causing the bank to collapse. So I got a gun, set it up my father's old bedroom, looked right down on the creek, and raised the window, set up sort of a sniper's nest so I could start shooting." And I said, "Merle," I said, "how long have you been doing that?" He said, "Oh, about a month." And I said, "That's amazing. What do you do with the bodies? Do you pile them up or other people give you?" He said, "Oh, well, it's not a problem. I ain't got but one."
And he didn't eat it, I hope.
So apparently, nutria are rapid little devils loose in the wild, because Merle, with his sniper's nest, had managed to shoot one in a month.
They're quick. I know I had years ago, I lived on a lake and we had above ground utilities because it was pretty rough out there. You know, it was just bad roads getting, it was a wonderful place to live, but it was still pretty rural. And all of a sudden my power went off, the whole street went off. It was only three streets deep in this around this huge lake. But yeah, I called the utility company and they came out there and I hear this knock on my door and this guy says, "Ma'am," because it knocked out a transformer. He said, "How long's that squirrel been dead?" I said, "What squirrel?" A squirrel had gotten the transformer and knocked out the whole neighborhood. I said, "Well, I called you about an hour ago." He said, "Oh, good." I said, "Why? Why?" And
Why
I
is it
knew.
good?
"Why are you asking me?" He said, "Oh, that's going to make a good squirrel supposed to be caught." I went, "I have to go." I had to go throw up. Seriously. I almost threw up on his feet. He took that dead squirrel and he ate it. And I'm not over it yet. So.
We had I lived in Atlanta, and they were all over the place, but I relate to them on East Lake Drive, going from our house down to the famous country club. We had those trolleys, where the two arms go up to the
Yeah.
wire,
Yeah.
and they're electric. And a lot of the caddies and workers from that worked at the club would get off the bus right above our house and walk the rest of the way to the shack. So I had the opportunity of seeing them. They all carried a bag. And when some animal, raccoon, squirrel, whatever, made the mistake of touching both wires simultaneously, they would be electrocuted and dropped to the street, and they'd pick them up. And I knew most of them. And I said, "Gentlemen, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, we take these to the club and put them in the refrigerator, not where your food goes."
And
And
not near the ice cream, please.
I So now I know where they go. They go in the refrigerator where my food goes. But anyway, that was how, among the ways they fed themselves back in those days. They weren't making a lot of money caddying at the club, and but they were gatherers. I guess that's not a hunter. You're a gatherer if you're
Okay.
picking up dead animals. But in their defense, not unlike your squirrel, it hadn't been down for long. You know, it was one of those, and now you got yourself a squirrel.
Oh, it was in full rigor. It was shot. It was. Because I watched him pick it up and it was stiff as a board. It hadn't been dead long enough to be stiff as a board. So, but you know,
Yeah.
here, I'm talking about stress. That's ridiculous. I mean, but I do eat alligator, love oysters, eat a lot of shrimp. We have a lot of fresh food here. Squirrel is not fresh. I'm sorry, or nutrient.
Generally speaking.
It ain't gonna happen. I'm careful. If I'm with somebody else and they've got something on the grill, I'll ask them, "What is that?" Seriously, tell me the truth. What is that? Because
A good
you
question to
never
ask in the
know.
South. We
Yeah.
were watching. I sound like I'm a television addict, but there are things that we enjoy. It's on the weekend. And it's something about foods from around the world. And what I like about it is it's as much as when they're going to a restaurant in Naples, you hear more about Naples and the surrounding countryside than you do the restaurant. So it's almost like going to history class. It's a really neat thing. But they're always, the other day, they were someplace, it might have been in Louisiana, but they were someplace where seafood is the item of the day. And they were doing frogs they had gigged, various animals that go into some sort of stew. Makes me one of my favorite southern foods is Brunswick stew. But this show made me wonder if I should be eating it because Brunswick stew is anything
On
they
that,
have.
I
Anything.
around here we call that a debris. It's exactly what you think it is, except maybe the fur. May and I'm not even sure about that.
Gigi said something about, "Well, I don't want to eat squirrel." And I said, "Well, honey, I'm not taking you back to the South anymore. You may have had squirrel and didn't know it, and alligator." And you know, and she
Alligator's
says,
yummy, though.
"Yeah," and she says, What do they taste like?" And I said, "Chicken."
Chicken.
Yeah, chicken. Everything
No.
tastes like chicken.
No, they don't.
And we got to get to sales in a second, but let me tell you an interesting thing about where I was raised, where you ate what was put in front of you. And especially if you'd never had it before, because you wanted to develop a variety of a palate of that's receptive to different things. So I go to work at Macy's, and among my early assignments, I'm the assistant buyer, although I didn't buy anything. I didn't know enough. I was really the chief stock boy in the exotic food department. And I'm making very little money starting out. So being in the food department was interesting. And the guy was the real buyer was a very nice guy. And he says, "Ben, I know what you get paid. So I want you to know within reason. You see anything in the stock room or on the shelf you want to eat, eat it. Just take it, open it, and eat it. You don't have to report or pay for it. And, you know, please don't abuse the privilege." I said, "Fine." Later that day, I ate my first fried grasshopper,
Ooh.
which what tastes like potato chips. You know, by the time you fry some,
Yeah.
they all taste the same. So it wasn't something I sought out, but I ate a whole little can of fried grasshoppers and thought, "That's not bad," which got me over in the rattlesnake cans and the alligator cans and so on. And I was raised to do that. So I already had a pretty wide selection of things I liked. But that really broadened. Within a week or two, I could go to Africa and survive. I don't mean in a big city. I could go to Africa that you see in the movies and survive. So anyway, you live and learn and eat your fried grasshoppers when they show up. But I don't think I'm probably had squirrel in Brunswick stew. But my one little hunting trip with some friends. My contribution was I was a pretty good shot with a rifle. I shot a squirrel, and as it dropped to the ground, I thought, why'd you do that?
Yeah,
And
I
then I
ran
picked.
over one time and I cried all the way to the dog. I sent the dog to the vet and it's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And the dog's like, what? I didn't see anything.
So you and I share likes and dislikes, with the exception of I'm not going to Louisiana anymore with all the stress that's there.
Well, and I might not be here when you get here. If I'm part of the stress, I should remove myself and go somewhere else.
Yeah, go to Brooklyn.
Oh God. No. No, thank you. And we're telling stories here and we're chatting, but you know the thing for anybody who's listening, storytelling is very much a part of sales. What you're
Absolutely.
getting here is a taste of who we are, how we operate in the world, how we show up in the world. And then we're going to tell you what's in it for you. So, you know, we're not just chatting for the sake of chatting. Well, we might be because we have a lot of fun, but storytelling is so important. You can't just walk up to somebody and say, I have this bag of alligator parts. Do you want some? What
How
are they
much will you
going
give me?
to? Yeah, I mean, it's just not going to happen. You have to develop an ease with yourself and how you show up in the world.
I coined a phrase that 50 years ago, I guess, that people buy from people they know, like, trust, and with whom they feel safe. And storytelling is a big part of that. I have never, since I learned how to sell, I have never walked into somebody's office or home and said, "Hi, how are you? My name's Ben Gay, and this is a 1973 grommet," and blah, 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 and right in the presentation. First, I pat the dog, praise the kids, tell them something happened to me on the way to their place. And by the time I start doing anything that resembles selling, and all of this can go pretty quickly, but anytime I get anywhere near selling you something, we're buddies. We've shared a few laughs. We've laughed about my name. I am Ben Gay, just like the back rub. And when they say something cute, I say, "Oh, come on, don't rub it in." And that gives them a big laugh, and we're off and running. So, and word pictures and stories are a huge part of that. Think of Zig Ziglar, very famous salesperson, sales trainer, speaker, good friend of mine. In fact, after I became head of the cosmetic company we both worked for, as I was fond of saying with the earshot of him, "Yes, I know Zig, he works for me." So I'm a
Every time
big,
you say that, I still just laugh. I can't help
yeah,
it.
I'm a big fan of Zig's. And but if you think about his stuff and listen to him, just like on the floor when we were selling together, he wasn't a salesman. He's written books about how to close sales and so on. He never did any of that. What he did was he made friends by being Zig Ziglar, and that included storytelling. This old boy down home, which he'd start many things with that, "This old boy down home." And then sometimes if he knew the name, he would call that out. Two story work. He got up and told a story one time, and I knew his routine as well as he did. Because in the early days, I carried that pump into so many meetings under the condition I could sit on the front row, take notes, and have a meal, breakfast, lunch, or dinner after the talk, so I could find out what I'd learned, review my mental notes. So one day he told a story I hadn't heard before. And so as we left, I said, "That's a new story to me." And he said, "Yeah." I said, "But you didn't mention the good old boy's name." And Zig said, "I haven't gotten that far yet."
So he made it up out of whole cloth and hadn't quite finished it.
Yeah, he was by the next talk he gave, that good old boy probably had a name. But mainly, you loved Zig.
Yeah.
He had a hardcore closer that worked with him, his business partner, Mel Lanius, just like I had that worked with me, Jimmy Rucker, the greatest salesman I ever personally worked with. And they were the ones, they were the hammers. If something needed closing, capital C, you brought in Mel or Jimmy. Meanwhile, Zig better than me, but Zig and I were at the front of the room doing a tap dance. As somebody said of Zig one day, lovingly, I said, what did you learn today? He said, not much. He's a lounge act. He said, but I had a great time. And I thought about that. You could have put Zig into a, you know, one of those lounges they have in hotels with the lady sitting over at the piano, have him come on and do 10, 15 minutes. He could just do a sales talk and people would have laughed and loved it and so on because he was a great storyteller. So if for those of you taking notes today, storytelling is a big part of effective selling. Let me give you a story I made a note of. I was sort of looking through the chapters that we're going to be working on today and in the future to see if I'd already written it somewhere. And it's probably in a book, but I forgot where. There was a gentleman named Les Davis who later in his life worked for me. And the last I heard, he must still be alive or he might still be alive. He'd be in his mid to late 90s now, I think. But a friend of mine visited him with him in Florida 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I said, how's he doing? He said, well, it looks like Les has always looked just as funny and sarcastic. He's just retired. So anyway, Les Davis was the top salesman at SMI, Success Motivation Institute, Paul Meyer's company, and the number one. And he rose up through the ranks and I think became vice president of sales, senior vice president of sales, but he kept selling that whole time. Number one, month after month after month, year after year. And then one day, Les had a massive heart attack. I didn't know him. I hadn't met him yet, and but had a massive heart attack and was laid up for like 6 months. And they didn't think he was going to live and so on, but he did. And he came out and slowly regained his strength and called Paul Myers at SMI and said, I'm ready to come back. He said, well, there'll always be a place for you. Come on over. So Les comes and he starts running leads. He wasn't getting into cold calling, wasn't working at all for him. And he used to make his living doing that. And the leads weren't panning out. He was no longer the number one salesperson. And he told me later, he said, I guess I lost my edge, my confidence. 6 months without selling was the longest 6 months in my life, with the possible exception of from my birth to 6 months. Because selling is just what he did. It's all that he knew. And one day his wife, Lil, said to him, I know you're frustrated. Why don't you do some of the things you taught people to do before? And he said, well, like what? and
he was said, frustrated.
Oh, he really was. And she said, well, for instance, you used to teach that they should send out this story probably now would have email stuck in it. But back then, we're talking about letters. She said, you told them to send out letters to people they were going to call on in a week or 10 days saying you were coming, not may I come? I'm going to be in your area Wednesday. You know, would 10 o'clock in the morning or noon be better? I'll take you to lunch if it's noon, that type of thing. The assumptive sale. I'm coming. I'm not asking your permission. I'm going to be in your lobby at 10 o'clock or whatever. And send those out. And again, before computerized typewriters and all, Lil fortunately typed like a machine gun. So she typed up 25 or 30 letters. They were brief, but the gist of them was, hi, I'm Les Davis with SMI. Paul Myers has asked me to come visit you and blah, blah, blah. And I'm making up dates. They mailed them on a Friday, figuring they'd be there by Tuesday, for instance, and sealed them all up, stamped them, gave them to their son to take to the post office, and waited till Tuesday or whenever it was, and Les started making the calls. And and the letters were staggered. Three or four of them said Tuesday, the next three or four said Wednesday, and so on. So Les started making the calls, walking in, I am Les Davis, I have an appointment at 10 o'clock and so-and-so. And all of a sudden, he was getting into people's offices and I guess some homes, depending on what SMI product he was selling, but getting into offices. And he was always a good closer. He closed me on millions of dollars worth of old Nightingale stuff when he later worked for the Nightingale Conant Corporation. And sale after sale after sale. And within a couple of weeks, by the time the sales added up, he was the number one salesperson at SMI again, got his vice presidency back, and was up and running
Great.
like the heart attack had never happened. Now
But
they decide, go
he
ahead.
lost his way somehow, probably
Yeah.
focusing. Listen, when you have a health event like that, I think parts of you mentally and emotionally just shut down while other scary parts take over and you get a little bit
Absolutely.
lost.
It's like being blind and your hearing improves, or
Right.
vice versa. But suddenly he was getting in, making the sales, back to VP of SMI and the number one salesperson. It's like nothing had happened. A couple of years later, it's time to get a new Cadillac. So they took their old Cadillac, a red convertible. Again, I never saw it, but this is the story. A red Cadillac out. And somebody said, let's go through it and make sure we don't have wallets under the seats or, and clean out the glove compartment, so on. So the three of them, mother, father, and the son, started cleaning the car and looking under things and decided to take the back seat out, the part you sit on, to look under that. And you wouldn't have been hearing this story if they hadn't done that, because under the seat were all of the letters the kid was supposed to have mailed.
What?
They had slipped between the backrest and the seat and had gone under the seat, like they were headed for the trunk, every single one. And he, being a teenager, probably was driving around, looked in the back seat, didn't see anything to remind himself
Right.
that he was supposed to mail the letters, and hadn't given it a thought since. But all of the letters, all of the courage that they gave Les had been buried under the back seat for 2 years.
So he was really operating under the assumption that
Correct.
these letters had arrived, that they were expecting him, or at the very least, they wouldn't toss him out and throw a garbage can at him. But he
Exactly.
walked in with full authority.
Like he was the King of England. Hi,
Right.
I'm Les Davis, and I'm here to, whatever.
I'll be
And
darned.
so anyway, it's a wonderful story. Zig has the old thing. I'm not personally very fond of it, but your attitude determines your altitude. And that's a great example of it being true. You hear all the cliches. Napoleon Hill said, first you have to fall in love with yourself, and once you et cetera. And those are all cute, and everybody writes them down and nods, and they don't change anything in their life. But there is living proof that if you can change your attitude, even if it's falsely, change your attitude. Because what the power Les was
Accidentally,
operating,
anyway, it
yeah,
wasn't false, it was accident. Or, as
the
my brother used to say, that was an accident. Have snarky, had
Yeah.
snarky siblings. It's a
Yeah.
family thing.
That's cute. So, if there's a lesson to be learned in that quick little story, ladies and gentlemen, it is that you are, to a larger degree, and none of these are magic, and solve all your problems, but you are, to a large degree, what you believe you are. First, sell yourself on yourself. Then sell yourself on the product or service you're representing. Then learn how to present it. And then we're back to where we usually wind up in these conversations. Come early, stay late, work on weekends, know how to present your product. Don't be afraid of no's. Don't be afraid of rejections. They happen. The best of us experience rejection after rejection after rejection. My figure, and I think I've told you this before. In one-on-one sales presentations, I figure over the years I've probably given 100,000. My closing rate, not in the early days, but the one I like to talk about, is 86%. Assuming that closing percentage went back to the early days, 14,000 people have listened to the Ben Gay sales presentation for various products and service. 100,000 have listened and 14,000 have said no. But I'm still standing. I'm still making calls. The only difference now, and I would encourage you to live to this point, be experienced this point. I had an 86% closing rate, but the National Communication Center, the first call center in existence, toll-free call center in existence, the one that started that industry, those ladies had a 100% closing rate selling the products and services we sold for all of our clients. What's the difference? Well, they were just regular people. Most of them had 100% closing rate the first day they walked in and threw a headset on. The difference is they were taking incoming calls. The ad had already pre-sold or raised the
Yeah,
curiosity of the
warm
caller.
market. It wasn't
Yeah,
cold, it was a warm
yeah,
market.
they weren't calling because they were lonely. They were calling to buy the Elvis Presley records or the Ginsu knives or the Xerox copier or whatever. So their closing rate was very high. Well, before you go, well, that's different then. It's not different. Here's the trick. Get people calling you. Make sure that your referral network is strong. I get numerous calls in a week. I'm guessing 30 calls in a week. I have never really added them. That's my gut talking, saying, Bob Smith told me to call you. Or I'm about to get this, and so and so said, don't get it till you talk to Ben Gay. Or I'm looking for land in Arizona, and I'm told you're the guy. Those when you get those starting to come, and that might contribute, by the way, to my 86% closing rate. When you get those incoming calls, the selling, the importance technically of selling and closing goes way down. So I learned a tremendous lesson sitting in the call center, taking calls, but wandering around listening to people. And they didn't fear selling, they didn't fear rejection. They were paid to answer the phone and take information. So they did. And they had 100% closing rate. And I probably, I'm glad I didn't tell them because that would have messed with their minds. They would have started going off script and making up things to become a salesperson. And their closing rate would have dropped dramatically. So become the person that people go to, the go-to person, and get them phoning you. Now, I want to tell you that takes a while. That's not, I tell you, by Saturday, people are phoning you, but it's worthwhile to start working on. Your closing ratio will go up. Stress level will go down unless you live in Louisiana, in which case you'd be stressed out all the time anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to go have a nervous breakdown. I've already scheduled it while you were talking.
Do it late in the afternoon. You don't want to race into it. You're
No.
in Louisiana time.
No, I have to think about this. And, you know, maybe have a little, it's time for gumbo. You know, I've got things to do. So,
So
but
that's
we,
the Les Davis story, and trust me, there's lots of truth in there. Although Les didn't know the truth was going on at the time, it was 2, 3 years later before he found out what his new sales secret was: confidence.
I have to ask, did the kid get, did he get smacked around the head and shoulders?
It, by
What
the
was
time I knew him, he was late teens, early 20s. It was a funny family story. But who's, you know,
he didn't get disinherited.
he wouldn't know. He wasn't smart enough to say, well, Dad, thank me. If I'd mailed those letters out, you'd have been warned, you know, that you were coming. They might have phoned you, said, don't come, and
Oh.
whatever. So as it turned out, it was great. And I've trained people in various situations to walk in as if the letter was sent, even refer to the letter. Even though you didn't send one, I'm here to see
It's a
Mr.
mindset.
Jones. As I told him in my letter, I'd be here at 10:30.
Right.
Sorry, I'm a couple of minutes early. Shall I sit down or may I go in? You know, and a large percent, all of them will say either sit down or come in. I'm not aware of anyone of it may have happened, but I'm not aware of Les being turned away from anyone. Absolutely. I do remember him saying something about, they said, well, we can't do it now. Is 1 o'clock this afternoon okay? He said, yeah, that'll be good.
Excellent. Well, listen, I'm still on page, I'm, in the same chapter. One of my favorite parts of this particular chapter is Houston, and we all know what the end of that sentence is.
Yeah.
So let's talk about
And I
that.
knew those guys.
No, you did.
I did. I was attitude coach for the astronauts of Apollo 15, 16, 17, and I met all the others. 12 men have walked on the moon. I've shaken the hands of every one of them. So, yes, I did. I didn't know them then, but I certainly know the phrase. In fact, I use it sometimes. I'll use it in the sales presentation. Guy says, go sideways on me. And I go, oh, Houston, we got a problem here. And he or she will laugh because they know the phrase and say, tell me what it is. What did I miss? Not the back of the spaceship blew off, but what did I miss? Houston, we got a problem here. And the message in the Houston story is one, training, because I talk about that in that chapter. He'd been trained for that moment. When I was working with him, I said, what if this happens? And in almost in unison, I worked first with and most closely with the crew of Apollo 15, Jim Irwin's flight. He's now gone, but he was a became an evangelist after his space days. But if I say, what would happen in this situation? Like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, the three or four or five of them, however many were at the gathering, would say what they would do, word for word the same, because they'd been put in that situation time after time after time in training. When the back end blew off the spacecraft, they knew from training that was a possibility.
Oh my.
So it's just like the parts on of Apollo. I know it better, although I worked with some of the space shuttle people too. But with the Apollo people, if when the Apollo rocket took off, it was 99% perfect. I'm making up numbers, but I'm close. 99% perfect. That meant there were only 7,000 and some odd broken parts on it. But that was okay because they had triple redundancy. Everything that was supposed to work on the Apollo shot that was crucial to the flight was backed up by another one that was backed up by another one, triple redundancy. And then the people flipping the switches had been doing that. Neil Armstrong, one of the greatest test pilots that ever lived, you couldn't put him in a situation that he didn't know the way out of, plus his NASA training. And that salespeople should be like that. If you've been in selling over 30 days, you've heard most of the objections you're ever going to hear, certainly about that product or that service. So be prepared for it. It enables you to say and said, oh my God, I'll leave now. It enables you to say to yourself, Houston, we got a problem here. And go back to your training and remain calm. Never let them see you sweat. People don't like to buy from scared people or desperate people. I have a good friend who said, who used to say, he's gone now, Bernie Dorman with CEO Space. He said, you know what the worst smell in the world is? And I'd say, no. And he'd say, commission breath.
Oh, what is that?
It's the sign of desperation. I'm a salesperson. I need this sale. I will say and do whatever's necessary. I'll cut my price. I'll speed up delivery. I'll lie to you. I'll do whatever's necessary to get the sale and therefore the commission. And that's what he called commission breath. He said, I can't stand the smell of it or the sound of it. Neither can your customers. You need to become, Houston, we got a problem here, and understand it and deal with it. There's a chapter in the closers part two. We may have discussed it, but Tony Rubuleski is one of his favorite. He carries the closers around with him to his speeches and seminars just to flip it open to the chapter that says, just fly the plane, son. And that comes from, I was taking flight lessons and we're walking out to the plane one day, and my instructor said to me, Ben, because we live in rattlesnake country, you've just taken off and you're 4 or 5,000 feet and you look down and there's a rattlesnake curled up beside your foot. What do you do? And I, being an idiot, said, well, grab it by the head or behind the ears or, you know, whatever, stomp on it, do whatever. And he went on. He said, oh, that's interesting. And then he threw out something else. And I went into this long thing, all of which had in common distraction. In other words, I was telling him, I will get distracted if there's a rattlesnake or the engine suddenly shuts down or the altimeter doesn't seem to be working or whatever. I'll deal with that. And he said, screaming at me while I'm paying him to scream at me, he screams at me, just fly the plane, son. And he went on to tell me that the mountainsides and hillsides of the world were littered with the bodies of 200-hour pilots who got distracted and were tapping on the altimeter trying to get it to work when they flew into the hillside.
Did you tell me some John Denver? I was going to ask you, didn't something very close to that happen to him?
Yeah, he chartered a plane from us or rented a plane. And apparently, this is from after they go through the wreckage, but apparently what happened was the engine cut out or started coughing or something. And the fuel gauge in that particular plane is right over the pilot's left shoulder, right shoulder. He turned around, they think, and started tapping on the gauge and went right in the ocean at over 200 miles an hour. So he got distracted. If his flight instructor had been mine, he would have hopefully known, fly the plane, it'll glide. You may not like where it lands. You may not like that, you know, this may be your first water landing, but if you keep it like the gentleman who landed the commercial jet on the Hudson River.
Sully,
Sully, if you keep the wings level and you remain calm, you can put it down without loss of life with 100+ people on board. He knew to fly the plane. You know, they were trying to talk him into, fly to Teterboro or fly here, fly there, and he kept speaking over the air traffic controller saying, no, I can't do that. I'm not going to make it. Well, where are you going to put it down? Looks like in the river. You know, it's just one of those things you don't want to hear. But
yeah,
I've been in a belly landing on water up at Tahoe, and I was amazed. The plane had some damage, water damage, and skin damage, but it was pretty much like a landing on the runway, except it ended more abruptly. It doesn't glide, you know, forever like skipping rocks. So you keep flying the plane, son. Houston, we got a problem here.
Right.
Keep dealing with the issue that you came to deal with. And
fly
other
the
things.
Plane. I'm sorry, I need to interrupt. So
that's right.
Before I forget, but we're talking about just fly the plane, son. That is on page 153 of the Closers Part 2. So it's a great, great chapter. So make a note of that.
The staying focused is probably among the most important parts of selling people panic. Johnny Hyde, who used to work for me, a great disc jockey, first man to play Beatles music in the United States, producer of Wipeout and Monster Mash. So now
Monster Mash.
Now you know who he is.
I play that every Halloween. I have a rotating list. Halloween's Monster Mash and the purple green eye. There's a few of them. They're
one-eyed people
yelling.
eater.
Yeah. There's several of them that if I don't hear them, it's not Halloween.
Well, you have Johnny Hyde to thank for that. He put together that little slapstick band and did it. But he was also, for me, an excellent salesperson after I got him out of the disc jockey business and got him working, make some serious money. I think it's in one of the chapters in the book, he said that selling was like standing up in the back seat of a roller coaster, trying to keep your balance and so on. But he went on to say, if you're trained, it's doable. You know, if you've ever been surfing, I haven't, but if you've ever been surfing, you know that you can stand on a moving object that's not necessarily behaving with waves breaking over you. Some of those photograph or films you see are just breathtaking, and then they come shooting out the other side. That's concentration. They came to surf, to ride the wave to the beach, hopefully, and waves breaking over their head, and other surfboards that were abandoned flying by your peripheral vision and so on shouldn't get you away from the mission. Selling is that way. Stay focused on why did you come here. May have told you this story before, but selling land still do some. Selling, writing the program to sell the land, some land in Arizona, 1 acre plots back then for $12,000 in a semi-established community, if you like, the desert. And he guy calls me up and says, I understand you're a great copywriter and so on. And he said, we run these 1 inch ads, one ads. Can you sell a $12,000 piece of property in a 1 inch ad? I said, no. He said, well, you haven't heard the details. I said, well, I'm smart enough to know. The answer is no. He said, well, I was told you could sell anything to anybody. I said, well, given enough time, and so I wouldn't, but given enough time and space, that's probably true. What you must focus on is in that ad, what are you selling? He said, well, I don't know. I said, you're
There you have it.
selling them getting in contact with you.
Right.
So we put in an 800 number, which they'd never thought of. And the ad said to hear a recorded message. You're not going to meet some commission breathing monster salesperson. You're just going to call in and listen to a recording. And he said, well, how does that sell land? I said, now we have their name. If they responded to the ad properly, we now have their name and number. Today it would be and email, and their mailing address. So we now make another sale. What's that? Give me your name, number, et cetera, and let me mail you some stuff. And you mail out the direct sales letter, which begins to sell it, and the contract that they can sign, and a return envelope, et cetera. So my point here is not only stay focused on the sale, understand where you are in the sales process. When you run a 1 inch ad in newspapers all over the country, you are not selling land yet. You're selling the idea of them picking up their phone and dialing an 800 number. Then you're selling the idea of give me some more information. And then step three, and sometimes step four, we're selling the land. So I don't get pulled off center. I don't get distracted. And I keep in mind, what am I selling at this point? If you're selling vacuum cleaners door to door and you get into somebody's house, well, first of all, the first sale is get in somebody's house. If you're running a lead, you may still have to sell them. They forgot they set up the appointment, they've changed their mind, et cetera. So your first sale is get in the house. Your second sale is sell them on you. Third sale is
Story
sell them on your company.
right.
Fourth sale is let them having you demo the product. And the fifth sale comes only after the demo was over, and now you're answering questions and so on. Salespeople have a tendency to knock on the door and try and sell them a vacuum cleaner. That works if you're selling Krispy Kreme donuts. I want a citywide sale. Knock on the door, they open the door, hand them and say, here are your donuts.
Oh
By
my
the
God.
way, I don't know if you're aware of this. The picture didn't look like the real Krispy Kreme donut we all love. It was chocolate
I've never
covered.
had one.
You've never had a Krispy Kreme donut?
I don't like donuts. I don't like sweet foods.
Well, sweet and you don't like donuts
I
might
don't.
rule you out. But
No, I just don't like.
Gigi's never had a Krispy Kreme donut. We're driving down Memorial Drive to take in Atlanta to take her out and show her Stone Mountain with the carving on the side and so on. And my sister, her husband, Gigi, and me are riding along. I'm driving, and on the left-hand side, across three lanes of traffic, the hot donuts ready sign came on the Krispy Kreme thing. They turn it on whenever they're coming out of the oven, and I careened across three lanes of traffic. And Gigi said, "What's up? What's up?" And I
Fly the
said,
plane, son.
"Yeah." I was flying the plane. I was going to the Krispy Kreme donut shop. And she said, "My God, how good could they be?" And so I bought a dozen or two or whatever. And my sister and her husband immediately, not even polite, flipped open the box and each got one out. And Gigi's looking like, "What is this?" I've never seen that kind of reaction to food. And so I said, "Well, try one." And they were still warm. And she put one in her mouth and said, "Oh my God, that's about the best thing I've ever tasted." And
Really?
she ate three, and they're pretty good size. They're not little tiny donuts. She
Huh.
ate three before I had the car started and we were backing out. And then later,
And
well,
you all had sticky fingers all over
oh,
that.
sure.
Guarantee you did.
And later at Sonny's Barbecue, where I also took her, not my favorite place, but it's very good. Took her for lunch. She had to excuse herself and go in the bathroom and heave because she'd never eaten three sugar-coated, it's crinkly looking, it's been cooked, but it's sugar basically. But she'd never eaten three of anything with that much sugar on it,
See, I
nor
would
had
be
she.
sick too. I don't eat sugar. I avoid it as much as I can. I don't like it. And if I do accidentally get sugar, I honestly will gag and probably throw up.
Well, Gigi's over that, but she doesn't eat them three at a time
No.
anymore. But anyway, this is great marketing, and I hope they're going to do the real Krispy Kremes, the popular one. The one they pictured was a chocolate covered. McDonald's
I
is
saw
putting.
that. Yeah, I saw that yesterday. McDonald's is another place I don't go to. I mean, I just
But
don't. But
they're going to
I
sell
saw
Krispy
that.
Kreme donuts.
I bet they're not.
I thought, yeah. Maybe not to you,
No,
but
I bet there's something like a crispy. I don't know.
well, it just may not be the popular one. The
Oh,
one with the
okay.
crinkly sugar on the outside is the one people think of when they think. In fact, I thought when I saw the ad, I thought they got the picture wrong. That's not a Krispy Kreme. Well, it's probably from the Krispy Kreme donut factory. I've just never had one. I eat the pure. I'm a purist when it comes to Krispy Kreme donuts. The real deal.
The real deal,
Yeah. But there's a great example of marketing put together. If you don't like McDonald's, but you love Krispy Kreme donuts, you'll go to McDonald's. And
Well,
by the
I
same
wave and
token,
I go past because I see people, winding around the building at 11 o'clock in the morning, which is ridiculous. But to me, you eat your meals at mealtime. No wonder you're
and
so fat.
seated.
Yes.
I don't have things handed to me through a car window and
No.
then eat out of my lap. I've eaten in some tacky places. McDonald's might be one of them, but it's sitting at a table.
Right.
You
I can't do it either. I see people, running the roads and they've got one hand on the steering wheel and they're cramming something in their mouth and they are not paying attention to the traffic.
know. Absolutely.
Scares
Let's
me, it really does.
Do another section real quick. On
Okay.
page 221, it says "Make them feel good" as a little subchapter. And I was looking at it this morning, I thought as I was reading it, oh, that's pretty good. And then I had to remind myself I
You wrote
wrote
it.
it.
I do that. I'll see something online and say, hey, that's, oh, good girl, Denise. Yeah, wrote it.
But anyway, oversimplified and quickly, people will spend money when they're sad at a florist shop or a funeral home. They'll spend money when they're mad in a lawyer's office. They'll even spend money when they're scared in a gun shop, for instance. But if you don't sell one of those types of things, there's another time when they buy, and that's when they feel glad. And so you, the salesperson, and it goes on and explains the whole thing, which I won't read, but your job is to make them feel happy and safe and glad they met you, which goes back to people like to buy and do business with people they know, like, trust, and with whom they feel safe. All of those come under the heading of glad.
That
Okay.
leads to the referrals too, because once you come across someone like that, and I know I've mentioned my real estate agent, I bought my house in between Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, and I had to buy it sight unseen. Literally, people were snapping houses up from Texas, from New Orleans. They needed housing. And she was the best thing that happened to me, honestly. She knew exactly what I wanted, exactly what I was going to accept or not accept. And I refer her every chance I get.
There
I
you
haven't
go.
seen her since 2000. God, when did I, 2006. I haven't seen her, but I still remember her and I still refer her.
And therefore you stay in touch. And you ought to let her know, by the way, what you're doing. You're embarking on your podcast seminars and your new book. By the way, new
Yay,
book,
new
ladies
book.
and gentlemen.
Yeah.
We already have the closers part five, but for reasons with which I won't bore you, four was temporarily skipped. And Denise is writing the closers part four, which is selling, selling in all aspects, selling podcasts, selling through a podcast, bringing guests on who sell things, everything to do with selling and how to set up a podcast of your own. And also, I would think and hope one of the chapters will be how to guest on a podcast. And
Absolutely.
yeah, and to the hosts, how to treat a podcast guest. I'm constantly amazed how many podcast people ask me to be on their show and then make it difficult. As my friend Ray Considine wrote in his book titled Waymish. That stands for why are you making it so hard for me to give you my money in the podcasting? I don't know how what the acronym would be, but why are you making it so hard to be a guest on your show? Why don't you send me the link when I ask on time? Why don't you tell me how big your audience is? I'm not judging you. I just want to know whether I'm talking to your mother and your aunt or 50,000 people. I speak differently to different size groups with different size interests. And why did they join your podcast? That type of thing. And I know all that'll be in your book. But for those of you listening, Denise Griffiths is writing a closer's book, part four, on how to operate in the podcast industry, which she has been in, if I have the number right, for 19 years and
16. She's old
16.
enough to drive now.
Okay. Knows as much or more about podcasting than anyone. And her show, this one that I co-host on Wednesday, is in the top 2%. Is it in the nation or the world?
The world, it's
All
global.
right, top 2% in the world. So where I teach all the time, get with somebody who's already doing what you want to do and follow them. A person who's already doing what you want to do and is in the top 2% of all podcasts in the world is about to write a book. So go to her seminars, teleseminars, I think mainly, and get her book when it comes out and learn from the best. And Denise is the best.
Thank you, Ben. And I'm so excited. I think I told you this after we did our show last week, and then I called you and you sat me down and had a chat and told me I was going to write a book. I wasn't asked to write a book. I was
Hello?
I was told that I was going to write a book, and I was sitting there going, okay, I can do it. Then I went all over my house and did a happy dance. And I think I knocked the internet out because I didn't have internet the next day. I'm majorly excited about this. And I've always had this book in me, but there were so many reasons why I couldn't do it, wouldn't do it. Some of it I just didn't know how to do. And you took all of that off of me. And I've been writing. I'm sending you my first draft of one chapter at the end of this week, tomorrow, well, Friday. And it won't take me long because I've been thinking about this for 7 or 8 years. I've got all the notes. I just need to pull it all together. So thank you for bullying me. I appreciate it.
That's in this day and age, I'm not supposed to bully a woman, but sometimes it's necessary.
It was because I had excuse after excuse after excuse. And I go back and I look at him and go, well, that's no longer valid. That's not, woohoo, off I go. So thank you. I am genuinely honored to support the Closers series. I'm genuinely honored. I'm excited. Can you tell?
Yep, and we're excited. I'm looking at where I keep the books I reach for every few minutes, 10 or 12 that I've written. And in that stack, it's Closers Part One. There's a gap where Closers Part Two should be, but that's right in front of me for this call. Closers Part Three, then there's a five. And when I look at it, I go, three, five. What's missing? Oh, that's okay. Denise is about to fill that slot. We're really looking forward to it.
Oh, me too. And I have my closers 1, 2, and 3 right next to my desk. I mean, literally, I can just reach over without bending far to grab them. And in my mind's eye, I'm painting those word pictures. I can see part four in that stack of books. I can see it.
Super. Well, we're all
Anyway,
looking forward to it.
me
I
too.
think we're out of time, aren't we? I know that's your
Just,
job to tell
yeah,
me.
just about. So tell people very quickly, and thank you again. Tell people very quickly where they can learn more about the books. These need to be in your entrepreneurial library. I'm not joking. And where can they find, you've got a mentoring program, and how can they reach you?
Well, what they can do, let's do the last one first. What they can do to find out about the mentoring program wherein I do for people what Dr. Napoleon Hill and so many others did for me. They were my personal mentors, Earl Nightingale, Og Mandino, et cetera, Zig, when it came to speaking. And I do for my clients what those wonderful people did for me. And the way you can find out about it is just send me an email in the subhead or whatever you call it, the subject line, put mentoring program. And I'll know what you want and I'll send you out. Nobody's going to call you or bug you. I'll send out, it'll look like it's personalized to you, but it's a standardized letter on how the mentoring program works, what it costs, how to get involved. And we have financing available, although for most of you, that won't be necessary. It's not that much money to get the books, the closers, and soon you'll be able to get Denise's book when you go here. Go to stores, stores dot eBay dot com forward slash. Now, this is all one word, Ronzoni Books, RONZONEBOOKS. Ronzoni, that's it. Yeah. Is it dot com after that? No, that's it. Ronzoni Books. So do that, and they will offer you special pricing, free shipping. I don't do either at my website, and but they'll bring them to me for signing. So they'll still be signed, dated, and carry our famous unconditional, no questions asked, lifetime money back guarantee. So that's how you reach me.
Excellent. And I'm easy to find. Honestly, the best I'm all over the internet. But if you want to speak directly to me, call 1-888-888-719, excuse me, 6711. Hang on. Lost my voice all of a sudden. 888-719-6711. It doesn't ring in my office. You will have to leave a message, but I'll call you back immediately, practically. You will have a call within the first 8 hours after you've called me. So, what are we talking about next week, Ben? What are we going to open up there?
Let me suggest we get back into this chapter and just move on.
I like that because it's a big chapter and there's a
Yeah, it is. I haven't read
yeah.
it in a long time, and I thought, well, that'll be a show or two. And I'm looking at it, it's three or four shows
Or more.
or more.
Yeah. Let's
So
do this because it's an important chapter.
let's just pick up there and send them to page 222, And we'll skip in a few and say we're now on page 226 or whatever.
Right. Well, listen, everybody, thank you for spending time with us. And if you have any questions for me or for Ben about the closers, about sales mastery, about podcasting, whatever your questions are, find us on LinkedIn, find us on Facebook. We're easy to find. Seriously, I am distressingly easy to find. I like to think I'm invisible, but I'm not. So anyway, give us a, shoot us a note and we will answer that. We love to answer these questions on the podcast so we can share them with a lot of people. Ben, thank you for being you and for being my friend. And everybody, we will see you next week.